So imagine a user is in like a deeply dark place.
Right.
It's 2 in the morning. They are feeling completely overwhelmed by life, and they start typing out their distressed thoughts into ChatGPT.
Yeah, a scenario that happens a lot more than people realize.
Exactly. And a couple of years ago, the artificial intelligence might have just generated a comforting, if somewhat generic, natural language response.
Just a basic text reply.
But today, because of a massive architectural shift that shipped globally this very week, that AI is silently flagging the conversation.
Which is a huge deal.
It really is. It's routing the text to a trained human reviewer. And that human is then pinging the user's real-life best friend with a crisis alert.
Yeah, we are officially in the era of the AI crisis handoff.
We are. And, that single product feature is just one piece of a much larger puzzle that is snapping together simultaneously right
No,
now.
absolutely. I mean, we are seeing a complete overhaul of the internet's psychological and emotional safety layer.
Which is exactly what we are mapping out for you today on this deep dive.
Yeah, it's a lot to cover.
It is. We are relying entirely on the latest issue of Conversational AI Watch. That's issue 43.
A fantastic source, by the way.
Oh, it really is. It's a publication that specifically tracks this crazy intersection of artificial intelligence regulation, courtroom battles, and the actual product behavior of these massive tech platforms.
Right.
So our mission today is to look at this unbelievable convergence happening this week. Tech platforms are shipping operational safety features. The federal government is trying to establish a regulatory baseline, and individual states are aggressively building their own enforcement ceilings.
Yeah, and the most logical place to start mapping this out is actually with the technology itself.
Okay, let's unpack this.
Because right now, the platforms are actually moving way faster than the lawmakers. I mean, they are voluntarily building the exact systems that politicians are attempting to mandate.
Right, like what we just saw with OpenAI.
Exactly. On Thursday, they rolled out a feature called Trusted Contact.
And they didn't just like quietly beta test it,
Right.
right?
No, they pushed it live globally for adult ChatGPT users.
Wow.
Yeah, the age floor is 18 in most places, though it is 19 in South Korea.
Got it.
And it is specifically for personal accounts, so it doesn't apply to the business, enterprise, or education tiers.
What's fascinating here is how the mechanics actually work. It's kind of like listing an emergency contact on a medical form, but explicitly adapted for an emotional crisis detected by a machine.
That's a really good way to put it.
So a user goes into their settings and nominates one trusted person. Then the system sends an invitation to that person via email, text message, WhatsApp, or an in-app notification.
Right. And that nominated contact has 7 days to accept.
Right. And if they do, the feature just sort of sits quietly in the background.
Exactly. Until something goes wrong.
Yeah. If ChatGPT's automated detection system flags a conversation as containing serious self-harm or distress signals, it triggers an escalation.
But it doesn't just blindly fire off a text message to your friend, right?
No. The AI escalates the flagged conversation to a team of trained human reviewers.
And that human verification step is the linchpin of the whole thing.
Absolutely. The machine flags the anomaly, but a human has to confirm the context.
Right, because AI can misunderstand things.
Exactly. If the reviewer verifies there's a serious safety concern, the system sends a short alert to the trusted contact.
But crucially, the alert does not include the actual chat transcript.
Oh, that's an important nuance.
Yeah, it just notifies the contact that the user may be experiencing a serious emotional crisis and suggests they check in.
Okay, but I have to push back on the reality of this, though.
Sure.
If I agree to be a trusted contact for a friend, am I suddenly taking on, like, some kind of legal liability?
That is the big question.
I mean, if ChatGPT sends me an alert at 3 in the morning and my phone is on silent and my friend gets hurt, does that fall on me? It kind of feels like the platform is outsourcing its safety responsibility to random civilians.
Yeah, that is the exact tension inherent in this design. I mean, OpenAI consulted with over 170 mental health professionals to build this.
Wow, 170.
Yeah, along with their own expert counsel on well-being and AI. And the consensus was that an emotional tether to a known, real-world human is highly effective in a crisis.
I mean, I guess that makes sense psychologically.
It does.
Yeah.
But you are highlighting a profound difference in architectural philosophy. Contrast OpenAI's approach with what Anthropic did earlier this year with their Claude models.
Right, Anthropic took a totally different route.
They really did. Anthropic built a self-harm classifier, but when it detects an issue, it surfaces a banner directing the user to professional crisis resources.
Like the 988 Lifeline.
Exactly. Things like Throughline and the 988 Lifeline. And they achieved an appropriate response rate of over 98%.
That's incredibly high.
Yeah. So Anthropic routes the crisis to a professional system. OpenAI routes it to your personal network.
But regardless of the destination, OpenAI's trusted contact is the first crisis handoff design ever shipped at scale by a frontier model chatbot.
Which is why it's such a massive deal.
So if OpenAI is voluntarily shipping these robust safety features, why is Congress suddenly in such a rush to pass new laws?
Well,
are they just trying to take credit for something the tech industry is already doing on its own?
It's more about establishing an absolute floor. You know, voluntary features can be rolled back or modified or just completely ignored by smaller, less scrupulous competitors.
Oh, I see.
The federal government wants to make these designs mandatory. And that brings us to the GUARD Act, Senate Bill 3062.
Right, the GUARD Act.
Yeah. 12 days ago, it advanced out of the Senate Judiciary Committee on a unanimous voice vote.
Which is wild. Unanimous votes on tech regulation are incredibly rare right now.
Practically unheard of.
Yeah. It currently sits on the Senate floor calendar with 13 bipartisan co-sponsors. And the GUARD Act isn't just a slap on the wrist. It has real teeth.
Oh, absolutely.
It demands that any AI chatbot simulating an emotional connection or acting like a therapist must explicitly disclose that it is a non-human system with zero professional credentials in medicine or psychology.
Right. But the disclosure is really just the visible part. The operative enforcement mechanism is much harsher.
How so?
The bill carries strict criminal liability for any system design that induces harm in minors.
Wow. Criminal liability.
Yeah. According to Senator Hawley's office, those criminal inducement provisions are what actually give the legislation its power.
But a unanimous committee vote does not guarantee it survives a full Senate floor debate.
Not at all.
The opposition is fully mobilized against this, specifically the Electronic Frontier Foundation and the tech industry group NetChoice.
Yeah, the Electronic Frontier Foundation, or EFF, has three main objections.
Okay, let's hear them.
First, they argue the bill's definition of a regulated chatbot is far too broad.
Too broad how?
Well, they believe it could inadvertently criminalize search engines that use generative AI or homework helpers or even advanced customer service bots.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, because any system using natural language could theoretically simulate an emotional connection depending on how the user interacts with it.
Right. I mean, it's the classic problem of trying to define software behavior in legal terminology.
Exactly. Their second objection is about age verification.
Which is always a sticky subject.
Always.
Yeah.
To enforce rules protecting minors, a platform obviously must know who is a minor.
Right.
The EFF points out that effective age verification essentially requires users to provide government-issued identification.
Which nobody wants to do.
Exactly. And finally, they argue that penalizing vague concepts like emotional interaction or induced harm will immediately fail a First Amendment review in the courts.
Yeah, that makes sense. Then you have NetChoice, representing the tech companies.
Right.
Their policy counsel filed a formal opposition, arguing that forcing platforms to verify identity creates massive honeypots of sensitive personal data.
Honeypots.
Yeah, they argue that to protect kids, you are forcing adults to upload driver's licenses and facial scans to centralized servers, which are just prime targets for cyber criminals.
It's a valid concern.
I mean, I understand the cybersecurity risk, but frankly, NetChoice represents the platforms that stand to lose money and user engagement if they have to put up friction like ID checks.
Sure.
Aren't they just weaponizing the threat of data breaches to avoid the operational cost of keeping kids safe?
Mm.
We have to look at both sides here, but it just feels like a convenient argument.
It is a convenient argument for the platforms, yes. But that doesn't make the cybersecurity threat imaginary.
That's true.
If you mandate that every digital platform must definitively prove the age of its users, you are demanding the creation of thousands of new databases holding the most sensitive identity documents imaginable.
Right.
The opposition views the proposed legislative cure as a massive new harm vector.
Wow, a new harm vector.
Yeah. And this Senate debate is critical because the arguments being made right now will serve as the exact briefing templates for federal court challenges against state-level laws.
Right, because while the federal government is bogged down in debates over the First Amendment and privacy honeypots, individual states are losing patience.
Well, they really are.
They are aggressively moving ahead to build their own regulatory frameworks. We are seeing a flurry of activity just this week.
Yeah, Hawaii has a bill sitting on the governor's desk right now.
Oh, wow.
Vermont has legislation clearing the state Senate. Connecticut just passed a major transparency act awaiting the governor's signature.
It's everywhere.
But if you want to understand the operational reality of these state laws, you really have to look at Iowa.
Okay, so Iowa's SF-2417, it was signed into law on May 2nd.
Right.
It explicitly requires AI operators to adopt protocols for responding to user prompts about suicidal ideation, basically mandating the kind of crisis handoff architecture we just discussed.
Exactly. But there is a massive detail in the timeline.
Right, the timeline. The law officially takes effect on July 1st, 2026.
Yes.
But companies are not required to comply until July 1st, 2027.
Yeah, a full year later.
Why would a state pass an urgent mental health safety law and then give the industry a full 12-month grace period before enforcing it?
If we connect this to the bigger picture, it's because you cannot just write a line of code to safely verify, escalate, and hand off a human emotional crisis.
Right, it's not that simple.
No, it's incredibly complex. This staggered effective date model is becoming the bipartisan template across the country.
Because it acknowledges the engineering reality.
Exactly. Platforms need time to build complex architectures like automated flaggers and secure SMS gateways.
Yeah.
And they need time to hire and train the human review teams that oversee them.
That makes total sense.
Furthermore, that 12-month gap gives the statutes time to be tested in the courts before companies are hit with massive financial penalties for non-compliance.
Okay, so those state laws are primarily focused on consumer safety features. But here's where it gets really interesting. California is currently looking at something that fundamentally redefines liability when AI enters a professional medical setting.
Yeah, this is huge. Tomorrow and Thursday, the California Assembly and Senate Appropriations Committees will clear their suspense calendars.
And for context, this is a procedural choke point where any bill estimated to cost the state a significant amount of money either survives to see a floor vote or is quietly killed off.
Right. It's make or break.
Exactly. And two major bills are on that calendar. One would put a 4-year moratorium on selling toys with embedded AI chatbots for minors.
Which is fascinating on its own.
It is. But the more disruptive legislation is SB 903.
Yeah, SB 903.
This bill shifts the responsibility for AI and mental health squarely onto licensed clinicians.
Wow.
It prohibits artificial intelligence from being marketed as therapy or delivering mental health services directly. Clinicians are only allowed to use AI for administrative and supplementary functions.
And Vermont's pending bill does something very similar, creating an unlicensed practice exposure for any therapist who delegates a clinical diagnosis to an algorithm.
Wait, really? So if an AI highlights a pattern in a patient's transcript and suggests a diagnosis,
yeah,
and the therapist relies on that suggestion, the therapist is the one who gets sued if it's wrong.
Yes. The underlying philosophy these states are adopting is strict liability for the human professional.
So the AI acts as the medical scribe or the filing clerk, but never the doctor.
Exactly. The AI is permitted to act as the scribe. It can organize the filing cabinet, it can transcribe the notes, it can highlight anomalies.
Yeah.
But it is legally prohibited from acting as the doctor.
Right.
The clinician owns the clinical decision. The AI performs only the supplementary work the clinician designates.
And what happens in California usually dictates the national market.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Whatever the appropriations chair reads aloud this week in Sacramento will likely become the model statute for roughly 40 other states within a matter of months.
Wow. State legislators routinely just copy California's homework on tech regulation.
They really do.
So we have platforms shipping crisis features, Congress debating criminal liability, and states reshaping medical malpractice.
Right.
But what happens when the harm has already occurred, when the algorithms have already allegedly caused damage?
This raises an important question.
We are seeing the legal consequences of that play out right now in a courtroom in New Mexico.
Yeah. The case is State of New Mexico versus Meta Platforms.
Right.
They are currently in phase two of a bench trial, which means Judge Brian Beachide is hearing the case alone without a jury.
Okay.
And this entire phase is focused on a specific legal theory called public nuisance.
Wait, public nuisance? That's usually applied to like a factory dumping chemicals into a local river or a business creating massive noise pollution.
Exactly.
Applying it to a digital algorithm's effect on the human brain seems like a massive legal leap.
It is a radical expansion of the doctrine. Yesterday, the state called Dylan Pell, an epidemiologist for the New Mexico Department of Justice.
Okay.
He testified with reasonable scientific certainty that social media is a significant contributing factor to the adolescent mental health crisis.
Significant contributing factor.
Yeah. He presented data correlating social media use with depression, anxiety, body dysmorphic disorder, and self-harm.
That's heavy.
It is. He specifically noted that middle schoolers using these platforms heavily were failing to get the recommended sleep, and that sleep deprivation is an independent driver of severe anxiety.
Wow. And because of that epidemiological testimony, the remedies the state is demanding from Meta are just staggering.
Unprecedented, really.
They want a $3.7 billion mental health fund paid out over 15 years.
Billion with a B.
Yeah. They are demanding outright bans on infinite scroll, autoplay features, and push notifications during school and sleep hours.
Which fundamentally changes the app.
It does. They even want a hard 90-hour per month usage cap for minors in New Mexico.
Good luck with that.
How do you even enforce a 90-hour cap across multiple devices on a cellular network?
It's nearly impossible.
The remedies are so extreme that Meta has signaled they might just pull Facebook and Instagram out of the state entirely rather than attempt to comply.
Which is a huge threat. But the trial hinges on a very specific legal distinction that Judge Beatscheid is pressing witnesses on.
What's the distinction?
There is a vast difference in the law between being the direct cause of an issue and being a significant contributing factor.
I mean, in casual conversation, those mean basically the same thing.
Sure. But in a courtroom, that semantic difference dictates the entire defense strategy.
I see.
If the judge accepts that simply being a significant contributing factor is enough to hold a tech platform liable for billions of dollars in a public nuisance claim, it changes everything.
Because then it's a new precedent.
Exactly. If that standard survives an appellate review, it dramatically lowers the legal bar. You will see every state attorney general in the country use that exact legal standard to launch nationwide lawsuits against user-generated content platforms.
So what does this all mean? If you are listening to this and you are a tech founder, an engineer, or a builder caught in the middle of this web, you need an operational roadmap.
You absolutely do.
How do you align your product with this emerging compliance baseline before the lawsuits hit?
Well, the most immediate deadline on that roadmap is actually just days away,
right,
under the Take It Down Act.
Ah, yes. This is the parallel federal track dealing with intimate visual imagery and deepfakes.
Right.
The criminal provisions went into effect immediately when it was signed last year, but platforms were given a one-year compliance runway to build a functional notice and removal architecture.
And that runway expires next Monday.
Yikes.
Yeah. FTC Chairman Andrew Ferguson recently sent warning letters to 15 of the largest platforms companies like Amazon, Meta, TikTok, Discord, and Apple.
The big players.
Exactly. The penalty for failing to comply is brutal. It's $53,088 per violation.
Wait, per violation?
Per violation.
Yeah.
If an illicit image is shared and reported 10,000 times, a platform could face bankruptcy-level fines if the removal architecture fails.
That is insane. And the operational rule is incredibly strict, right?
Yeah.
If a platform receives a valid request, which requires a written signature, clear identification of the image, a statement of non-consent, and contact info, they have exactly 48 hours to remove the content.
48 hours, that's it. For any founder running a platform that hosts user-generated content, this notice and removal architecture is now the indisputable federal floor.
Right.
You have to audit your systems today and ask, is our 48-hour clock operationally defensible?
Defensible.
Right. If the FTC audits us, can we mathematically prove we met the window every single time?
Wow. And for founders building AI chatbots, the roadmap is equally demanding.
Oh, for sure.
The voluntary safety floor that frontier models are shipping right now, like OpenAI's Trusted Contact, is your new de facto compliance baseline.
Exactly.
If your product does not feature a robust crisis handoff architecture that loops a human into the equation, you need to plan for the legal gap to close on you very soon.
Because the era of unsupervised by design is officially over. Whether it is a human reviewer escalating a mental health flag, a clinician verifying an AI scribe's notes, or a moderation team hitting a 48-hour removal deadline, supervision by design is the required cure.
Unsupervised by design is the harm. Supervision by design is the required cure.
Perfectly said. The state architecture, the federal laws, and the platform behaviors are completely independent of each other, yet they are perfectly complementary. The convergence is the news.
It truly is an incredible scoop of movement for just one week.
It really is.
Think about the sheer scale of what we've covered today. OpenAI's trusted contact ships globally, altering how machines interact with human emotional crises.
Right.
New Mexico puts a state epidemiologist on the stand, attempting to legally link algorithms to a public health emergency.
Yeah.
California's legislature clears its suspense file, deciding the fate of artificial intelligence in the therapy room. Three state governors are holding their pens over new tech safety bills.
It's nonstop.
The Federal Guard Act awaits a brutal floor fight over First Amendment rights in the Senate. And the Take It Down Act's massive financial penalties go live on Monday.
The foundational rules of the internet's emotional and psychological safety layer are officially being written in real time.
So whether you are a daily user of these tools, a founder trying to build the next generation of software, or just someone observing the tech industry, these converging events will dictate how you interact with digital platforms for the next decade.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And before we wrap up, I want to leave you with a scenario to sort of mull over on your own that builds on everything we've discussed.
Okay.
It exposes the fragility of this new foundation. This entire regulatory and operational framework relies heavily on the concept of human intervention. It assumes the human safety networks.
Right.
But consider the liability and the real-world safety implications when the technology performs flawlessly.
Flawlessly.
Yeah. The AI successfully detects the crisis. The human reviewer swiftly approves the escalation. The alert text goes out to the designated trusted contact.
Uh-oh.
And that person simply doesn't check their phone.
Wow. It is the one variable no algorithm and no courtroom can control. Brush your brain every day.